Hello, and welcome to Beyond the Gates. I'm Annette Kirkland, and this season, we're going to be talking about 7 Labs, 1 ERDC. Discover the power of ERDC's 7 laboratories as they bring their technical expertise together to solve the nation's toughest challenges. From developing technologies that support the warfighter to improving the civil work systems we rely on each day, see how each of these 7 labs play a unique role in engineering a safer, better world. Today, I'm going to be speaking with 2 guests from the Coastal and Hydraulics Laboratory, otherwise known as CHL. And I have with me today Dr. Gaurav Savant. He's a Senior Scientific Technical Manager. And David May, he's the Chief Form and Storm. I say form. I did a flood and storm in one word. It's form. Flood. He's the Chief Flood and Storm Division Manager. Chief.
Chief.
Okay, awesome. See if I can get all this right. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, we're going to start off with my favorite question, okay? Could you tell me about yourselves, your background, and your roles at CHL?
All right, I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
Hey, like Annette said, I'm Gaurav Savant. I'm a Senior Scientific Technical Manager at the U.S. Army's Engineer Research and Development Center. I sit at CHL, but my job is to provide guidance for ERDC's hydrodynamic research for civil works and warfighter support. By training, I'm a civil engineer, but I could not tell you the last time I actually did engineering. It's usually ends up being guiding teams, talking to people, making sure that everyone is doing the research that the taxpayer has funded us to do in a manner that's the most efficient and worthwhile return of our federal dollars.
Sounds great. David?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having us. I guess I'd like to start with, I have had a really blessed life because of ERDC, so I'd like to add that background. But currently, I'm the chief of the Flood and Storm Protection Division. So my job at CHL is to manage 4 of the 8 branches within the lab. And like I tell my people, as a manager, our job is to be an enabler. So I kind of focus on that every day. I like to make research the hardest thing that our people have to do, and I take a lot of pride in that. But as far as my background, I had the privilege of never going to a daycare as a child because my mom worked at the Hub downtown, the old men's clothing store.
Everyone knows about that place.
Yeah. And my dad worked at GSL. So ERDC was my daycare from a very young age. I think I decided to be an engineer before I got to junior high. I got to travel the country with my dad, do international travel, and that kind of sold me. And so my senior year in high school, I actually applied for a job at CHL. I was hired by Dr. Nicholas Krause, one of CHL's greats, and as a student, so I kept that student job all the way until I graduated Ole Miss in 2014. Upon graduation, I did research for 5 years and then became the chief of the River and Estuarine Engineering Branch in 2019. Fast forward to 2022, I did a detail at Mississippi Valley Division as their science and technology officer. Really enjoyed my time there. But then had the opportunity to come back to CHL and get back into management. So I've been in this role since 2024.
Great, great information. I think I've known you for a lot of that too.
Yeah.
All right. So for our listeners getting to know ERDC and CHL, how would you describe the overall mission of CHL?
So CHL, we drive our mission from the ERDC mission. And the ERDC's mission is to do vital research that improves the nation's economy and national security and reduces disaster risk. So deriving from that, the CHL mission is to do world-class research to solve the world's toughest water resources problems. Now, notice it doesn't say civil works or water, warfighter engineering or anything like that. It just says water resources problems, and they just have to be the toughest.
Right.
So to accomplish that, we conduct a wide range of research that deals all the way from how does infrastructure react to water interaction? How does the nation's coastlines behave as a response to storm surges or hurricanes or other events that happen? How do the rivers behave to changing rainfall patterns? How do we keep navigation open by predicting what does sediment do? when the water goes up or down. And a large part of that is done by researchers at CHL in collaboration with our partners at the Army Corps districts, as well as other federal agencies such as FEMA, USGS, EPA, and state agencies and nonprofits and academia.
Right, right. David, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, Garoff covered it really well there. I will say the side of the house I came from, river and estuary engineering, civil works is a big focus even today in my division. So that work comes in as reimbursable, and that's still a huge business line for the Coastal Hydraulics Lab. And when we say reimbursable, we usually mean direct support to the districts all across the country.
Okay. Okay. The theme of our show this season is discovering the power of ERDC 7 Labs, working as one ERDC. I know there are so many examples from the years. Can you share a story of how CHL partnered with another lab to deliver real-world impact?
Partnerships, like I mentioned previously, is a big part of how we are able to do all the great things that that ERDC does through research. And cross-lab collaboration between CHL, ITL, EL, all the other labs is a big enabler. I think people have probably heard Power of ERDC. The Power of ERDC is bringing together a wide range of competencies to deliver worthwhile and impactful projects for the country. An example, I'll give two examples.
Okay, please.
One in civil works and the other one in war fighter support or military engineering, as people might say.
Mm-hmm.
For civil works, a few years ago, we got a request from the Kansas City District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they had a problem of pallid sturgeon. These are species that live in slow-moving rivers, and they rely on that slow-moving water to actually get to adulthood and not be eaten by a bigger fish by getting into a big river where other predators might be. As the Corps and the nation has improved navigation on rivers, we have deepened the rivers, and that's made the water go faster. What that's meant is those small fish now get trapped in fast-moving waters, and they end up in bigger rivers where they get eaten by other fishes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And by regulation and law, we have to mitigate against that. So Kansas City District came to us and said, hey, is there some research that you guys can do that will help us slow down this water and allow these fish to grow to adulthood so that they have a chance of survival? So we reached out to our partners in the environmental lab, who are the ecological experts, and we came up with the idea of using the hydrodynamic expertise that exists at CHL, combining that with the ecological expertise that exists at EL, to design what are called interception rearing complexes, IRCs.
Mm-hmm.
These are structures that we can put on the side of the river, extending from the bank towards the center, that creates a little shadow zone around them. So it blocks off the water in that area,
mm-hmm.
creates like a little dead zone,
mm-hmm.
where these fish can hang out and not be trapped in fast-moving water.
Okay.
So behind that structure, they get a chance to grow. It also captures nutrients so they can eat. They don't have to go anywhere and get big and strong so that they can go into the bigger rivers and have a chance of survival. And that was a very successful project that allowed the Kansas City District to keep navigation open on the Missouri River,
right,
before it comes into the Mississippi River. The other one is our collaboration. Well, there are several, so I'm going to pick one.
Right.
With the Information Technology Lab. If people don't know, CHL maintains the Army's only operational ship simulator. What I mean by that is we don't use that for training, we use that for operational rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
However, it is a big building, a big facility, and what we realized was that operational rehearsal sometimes needs to be done at the point of need. So a soldier who is forward deployed, if they're going to go to a mission, they need to practice that. And we cannot have them come back here every time or send an entire big facility or create one everywhere they are.
Right.
So we collaborated with the Information Technology Labs, immersive dive team,
mm-hmm.
right? That's dynamic immersive visual environment, dive.
Right.
And created a system where it's almost like a video game.
Right.
But it's enabled by physics that CHL excels in. And the IT stuff and the information technology expertise that ITL excels in, to to create a virtual reality environment that's still physics-based, that's still realistic, that still provides people with the appropriate response of a vessel, a watercraft, or a ship that they can rehearse their operations on. That was a very successful collaboration, and that technology is now being transitioned over to the Army's watercraft systems to enable them to do that training at the point of need.
Okay.
Those are just two examples. Collaboration happens overtly and covertly. We are always talking behind the scenes to enable those collaborations.
Right.
And also very upfront, like, hey, let's collaborate.
Right. And more and more pressing that one ERDC.
Exactly.
Is what we're talking about this season. David, do you have anything to add?
Nothing.
He covered it, right? So from what I understand, CHL was actually the original laboratory of the Waterways Experiment Station, which grew into the ERDC that we know today. Can you tell us about that history and how it laid the foundation of the research you conduct now?
Yeah, gladly. So everyone here in Vicksburg is aware of the Great Flood in 1927. That was an eye-opening experience for the Army Corps and led to the Flood Control Act of 1928. And in that act was, we were to establish a National Hydraulics Laboratory. Originally, that was going to be in Washington, D.C. under the Bureau of Standards. But at the time, General Jadwin, the Chief of Engineers, lobbied Congress to actually move it by the Mississippi River with the argument that, hey, the Mississippi is the one we need to study.
Right.
So originally, Waterways Experiment Station was going to be in Memphis, Tennessee. But that November, I believe in 1929, the Mississippi River Commission moved a couple blocks from here into the MVD building. And because of that, they wanted proximity with the National Hydraulics Laboratory. And therefore, Waterways Experiment Station was established. There were other factors too. A cool fun fact about Vicksburg, because my dad's a geologist, you know, our soil is lerse, so it's wind-blown glacial silt. It's one of the only soils you can cut vertically and it will hold its shape. So when they were looking for land between Memphis and Vicksburg, the soil actually played a part too. So the first models were put in, I believe, in 1930, and it was the Illinois River backwater.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in our current location, Durden Creek, Brown Lake, and they dug the first ones with a grapefruit knife.
That's right.
What I've always heard. The original mission was to study the nation's rivers and get a better handle on flood control. But mission creep happens everywhere in the government, and then slowly it turns into, well, we need geologists, and then environmentalists, and we need computers. And fast forward to 1999, we have four well-established labs in Vicksburg,
mm-hmm.
and they combine with other U.S. Army Corps of Engineer labs to make the ERDC we know today. But yeah, we do take a lot of pride. We are the original, or the
mm-hmm.
hydraulics lab, and we're still doing physical modeling. We do it a lot different. We've moved on from the dirt, and we tried concrete for a few decades, and now we're using the Wellness system, which is very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you, David. All right. So water touches almost every infrastructure and security challenge. So how does CHL team up with other ERDC labs to combine your water expertise with their specialized research?
Yeah, so that's kind of... touches back to one of my previous answers.
Right.
How
that's what I was saying.
Collaboration, right?
Yes.
So collaboration sometimes happens organically, and sometimes you have to guide collaboration. And having an understanding of what other ERDC labs do, as well as other Department of War labs and other federal labs do, plays a big role in those collaborations. So, for example, if CHL has a project that is looking at extending the life of a lock and dam, locks and dams are infrastructure that allow navigation to happen, specifically locks. And then if their project required studying a miter gate, in that case, we would realize that it's a structure, so we would probably want to collaborate with the geotechnical structures lab at ERDC.
Mm-hmm.
GSL, in fact, is located here in Vicksburg at the Waterways Experiment Station campus. And we would reach out to the counterparts at GSL and kind of socialize the project with them and then get them looped into an integral part of the team.
Okay.
So that would be one way for civil works. And this happens all the time. For example, another everyone in this area knows Katrina, right? When Hurricane Katrina happened in the early 2000s, it was a primarily a water resources problem, right? There was a hurricane with a storm surge, but when that water touched the levees and the seawalls, they failed.
Right.
And at that point, that problem, instead of becoming just water problem, it becomes a compound problem between water and structures. And at that time, CHL worked very closely with our partners in the Geotech and Structures Lab, as well as Environmental Lab, Information Technology Lab, pretty much every ERDIC lab, to deliver solutions that the Army Corps of Engineers would deploy in New Orleans to create better levees, to devise solutions for better seawalls by changing configurations or the depth to which their foundations were going. So that's an example of a large-scale collaboration that happens. Sometimes, right now, CHL is involved in the recovery effort for the soldiers that were lost off the coast of Morocco, right? Those soldiers were lost in the sea, so that's a water problem. But the conditions there are such that we had to reach out to our partners in the environmental lab to get their expertise in remotely operated vessels. And they have deployed a team in Morocco with their ROVs to try to find those soldiers. So collaboration goes all the way from very large scale projects to very high priority ones, which is the recovery of our soldiers.
Right. So. Exactly. David, do you have anything to add? He covered it. Okay. A core pillar of ERDIC's mission is military engineering, just like we've touched on earlier. How does CHL support the warfighter?
Yeah, I can give one first. a recent one, and Grob knows more about it than I do, so he can fill in. But a cool one we did at the FRF recently was a exercise with Marines called the SURAB. I forget what SURAB stands for. But, one way... RFIs are a big one for CHL too. So if the military reaches out, we can apply rapid response like Morocco, a lot of hydrology studies. But one unique capability we have is the FRF in that it's kind of a natural laboratory in a controlled space by the federal government. So partnering with the military for exercises such as SURAB, upcoming, Army divers need training on PIRAT technology, which was partially developed by CHL and GSL, so it's a good collaboration example. But we're going to give them the training. They're going to repair our pier. So that's a unique capability like the FRF.
And you said the FRF. For the listeners that do not know what the FRF is.
Yes, the FRF is CHL's field research facility located in Duck, North Carolina. It is a former naval bombing range during World War II, so we have around 180 acres, I believe, property. And what that pier does for us, or what it contributes to, is the literal longest coastal data set in the world. Nearly 40 years of continuous data, and that data has fed, domestic models and international, and led to over, I think, 1,800 publications since 1980, because we make that data available to the world,
right,
to academia and partners. So the FRF is very unique.
Awesome. Grob, do you have anything to add?
So SURAB is surface observations, surface zone observations. So it's a SURAB tools, surface zone observation tools. It's a collection of technologies, tools, and methods that allow someone to figure out what's going on in the surface zone or the beach to analyze whether something is safe to operate in. So for example, if someone, it's summertime, so everyone's going to the beach, how do we figure out what the underwater looks like by just looking at the surface.
Right.
So SURAB tools help warfighters do that. David talked about the RFIs, the request for information, which is a kind of like ad hoc tools when a soldier who's deployed or preparing to be deployed can reach out and ask us questions. We also have deliberate programs of warfighter support, right? And our direct program for warfighter support gets its guidance from the National Defense Strategy, which provides guidance to the Army Strategy, and that then translates down into what R&D we do. Coming to the forefront now is kind of homeland defense.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And a big part of that, like historically, the U.S. has been what people call Fortress America. Right? Germany could not attack us. North Korea historically cannot attack us. All these adversaries had to overcome these large distances to get to the U.S.
Right.
But our near-peer adversaries now have those missiles and other technologies that can attack the U.S. homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we conduct R&D and what R&D can we do to protect the homeland for those adversary, from those adversary actions. The
right.
Mississippi River.
Right.
But historically, the nation has used like railroads and roads and airports as strategic infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
But if we think about it, the Mississippi River is the largest continuous corridor of transportation that exists. It carries more than $500 billion worth of goods every year.
Right.
And a very small component is actual defense related. So, right, we are conducting R&D in collaboration with the Mississippi Valley Division of the MVD to come up with a way to quantify what is the value of the Mississippi River in homeland defense. How do we use the Mississippi River to transport troops and material from Army bases that are inland all the way to the coast so they can be either forward deployed to their operations or forward deployed for exercises.
Right, such a valuable asset.
Yep.
Absolutely. CHL plays a massive role in keeping our inland waterways and ports open for business. Why is that such an important work? And can you highlight a recent project where CHL's expertise directly improved our nation's navigation infrastructure?
Yeah, I'd be glad to. I always like to highlight, I think it was a New York Times article 2 or 3 years ago that came out that said that the Mississippi River was one of the main reasons that the U.S. became a superpower.
Right.
And like Grav alluded to, the sheer amount of goods that are transported on that river is staggering, but it's also the only river that runs through our breadbasket.
Right.
So that's an important thing to keep in mind. So the Mississippi River, Civil Works, the navigation mission of the Corps, that's directly tied to our economy. And a good example that we actually had, I guess around 2020, would be Victoria Bend. So that's just north of Vicksburg here.
Mm-hmm.
And after a year of high water in 2019, that bend in the river accumulated over 30 feet of sediment. That was enough to stop river traffic for 13 days. In that 13 days, 178 barges were stopped. I don't have the equivalency table in front of me, but that's well over 1,000 18-wheelers worth of goods. That does have an impact on the economy. So Vicksburg District, MBK, went in and dredged strategically to get the river back open, but they realized, like, oh, this problem's going to keep coming up. So we, being CHL, and specifically Keaton Jones and River and Estuarine Engineering Branch, worked with them to model that bend, and I think he modeled over 100 different dike configurations and heights and lengths to ensure that that sediment would not back up in that bend again. That was 2020, 6 years in. We not had another stoppage like that. So I think that's a really good example.
That's a really great example.
Yeah, of how, you know, our modeling can help the districts and their operations of keeping navigation moving.
Absolutely. Would you like to add anything?
They're kind of piggybacking on the sediment impacts to navigation, the Southwest Pass of the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last pass before the Mississippi River meets the Gulf. Like, that's right at the intersection. That has a persistent problem with sedimentation.
This,
mm-hmm. All the material in those river kind of deposits there, and that's one of the biggest expenses that the Army Corps has across the entire enterprise to dredge it out, put it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't solved that problem yet, but that's an example of an R&D problem, of a problem that requires R&D. There is
mm-hmm.
no quick solution to it, and that's the value of R&D. Like, you invest in R&D over time so that when the solution happens, when you come up with a solution, it has a big impact in terms of how that solution then translates into savings in resources that the Army Corps and the country has to put into keeping the navigation open.
Right. Well, the thing is, we've already talked about this place, but it was part of one of my questions. So CHL is also home of one of my favorite Erdic facilities. I've been there several times, is Duck. We talked about the FRF, the Field Research Facility on the Outer Banks in North Carolina. But we've talked about their work on the show before. But is there anything else you'd like to remind our listeners of why the FRF is special and what kind of work they do?
Yeah, I guess I would again like to highlight, I like to think of it as a natural laboratory
right.
that we can make available to our partners. So we already mentioned the military,
mm-hmm.
but another cool one was Project Vesta a couple of years ago. So that is a private company that had an idea, I think it was bee tree nourishment with olivine or a mineral like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able, because Erdic is really good at partnering, with a a company from a foreign country, we're able to host them, do the test because of our equipment we have there, the larks that make duck famous. You
know, the crab, all those neat equipment things up there.
Yeah, so the unique data capturing ability we have at the FRF allows us some really cool partnering capabilities like that. I think Project Vesta is a really cool one to highlight for that.
Okay,
and,
great.
And just reiterating that, you know, as with all of our CHL, we partner with academia, private. It's a really cool setup.
Okay. Graf, do you have anything?
Yeah, look, touching on the warfighter parts of FRF. So being a natural lab is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It allows our partners in the Department of War, the Navy, the Marine Corps, to deploy their assets there and test it out before they actually make large-scale purchases.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that's so FRF is a location. What makes it unique is the expertise that exists there.
Right.
The people that live and work at FRF are expert in surface zone processes. They can, I'm pretty sure they probably have dreams of surface zone. Like, oh, it's waves breaking. How to figure out what's going on with the wave?
Right.
So they can provide really good insight based on expertise, experimentation, and just knowledge of that area on whether sensors or a piece of equipment would work well when they're actually deployed operationally.
Awesome. Awesome. So in addition to the FRF, CHL has other impressive facilities like the physical models that we've talked about, wave flumes, and the ship sim that we talked about in Vicksburg. How are you using these systems to tackle the hardest coastal challenges we face today?
Let's see. There are several challenges that those facilities are used to solve. Let's start out with the ship sim, right? One of the ways the ship sim is used, or the ship simulator, we call it the watercraft and ship simulator facility. The Corps has a big backlog of navigation design projects, right? And to alleviate that backlog requires the utilization of all available resources that exist at the Corps. And ship simulator is one of those. It's a synthetic environment that is used to analyze how navigation traffic would respond to a change in conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And in the recent past, the Francis Scott Keyes Bridge, when
right.
it collapsed in Baltimore, right, the Army Corps reached out to the ship simulation facility to help open that vital navigation artery up again. In the physical modeling realm, we have projects that are going on to design or redesign ports and harbors.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are doing a project for the Alaska District of the Army Corps to analyze what's going on or to redesign the port of Nome, Alaska.
Okay.
Which is like a dual use port. It's got massive utilization on the civil works side, but it's also got a lot of relevance when we deploy our warfighters to the Indo-Pacific. That's one of the main ports that all the people leave from. Those are just two examples. There are several upcoming ones. One of the ones is where we work with DARPA
right.
on something called Refence, which is looking at artificial breakwaters to mitigate storm surge. And we did all of that testing in our wave flumes at CHL. It's called the HISERF, Hudson Integrated Coastal mm-hmm. Engineering Research Facility. It's got these big paddles that generate waves. It's also got sand in it so that we can accurately represent how sand moves in the coastal zone. And all of that was brought to bear for the Refence project.
Right. And it's so important for people to realize how important the research and all the data and everything is so important. So important.
Yeah, one other cool one on the coastal side that was also done in the HISERF was mm-hmm. last summer, I believe, Dr. Duncan Bryant and Lee Langley, I guess it had never been done before, but they actually created and patented a tool that they took to Florida and scooped out a living sand dune, brought it back to Vicksburg mm-hmm. to do the erosion testing, and that had never been done before.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a good example of using our facilities for not just a domestic problem. I mean, beach erosion is a world problem.
Right.
And nobody had ever done a test like that. So that's a cool one to highlight.
Yeah. Perfect example of the toughest water resources problems.
Right. Exactly. And we're doing them. Erdic is doing them, absolutely. So building a secure and resilient future is a major focus for us this season. What role does CHL play in coastal resilience, especially when designing flood risk management systems to protect our communities from extreme weather, hurricanes, and rising water levels?
The history of CHL is fascinating. Right, it started out as hydraulics lab, then we merged with the Coastal Engineering Research Center to bring that coastal part into the hydraulics lab. Mm-hmm. So coastal is kind of in our DNA along with the hydraulics.
Right.
It's like it's our X and Y on that makes us work. One of the big things that we have done is the development of something called the Coastal Hazard System. That development started right after Hurricane Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
So as a historical background, before Katrina, the way the Corps used to design for storm surges was just based on the height of the water. It did not incorporate waves or anything else on top.
Mm-hmm.
When Katrina happened, we realized that that was not the appropriate way to do things. So at that time, we started using probabilistic methods that accounted for the waves, the storm surge just from the water, and other processes to give us a much better representation of how high a seawall needs to be to provide risk mitigation against coastal storm surge. So CHS is one of those products that is now used throughout the Corps. CHL mm-hmm. still maintains it. CHL still provides the subject matter expertise to use it. But every coastal storm risk management project out there utilizes CHS. And in fact, now we are working on research and development to extend that to the Pacific.
Right.
At present, it's only available for the Gulf Coast, the East Coast, and the Great Lakes. And we're going to expand it all out to all of our territories and other interest areas in the Pacific Ocean.
Okay. David, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I guess I want to bring up Gaurav's leading the effort, but compound flooding is something mm-hmm. that's a big focus of the Army Corps right now. And the simple definition is, right, what if you have a hurricane coming in the coast and we had heavy rain in the Mississippi River Valley mm-hmm. all year? That would be a compound flood event. And what we're trying to do is understand how our works hold up to that. How do the levees on the Mississippi, how do the seawalls, how does that impact navigation during an event like that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool research. Graf can expand on it more. But what I like about it is, from an engineering standpoint, we're not being reactionary right now. Mm-hmm. And that's ideal for us.
Absolutely.
We're not trying to recover from a storm. We're trying to prepare to fight nature and hopefully win for the next storm that comes
right.
and be prepared for it. So it's really cool work he's doing.
It's really interesting because there are drivers of flood that happened there that we can't even like foresee. For example, like during Hurricane Sandy in New York, there were areas that did not get any storm surge, but they still got flooded.
Right.
And that was because the storm surge backed up the stormwater drainage and that overflew the sewer system. And this area that was completely protected by levees got flooded from that.
Right.
And the problem with that is those areas don't have pumps to drain out. So
right.
those areas that were quote-unquote safe were the last ones to get relief because they had to deploy pumps.
And they right.
So that's
and they weren't, yeah, they didn't foresee anything
didn't
like
foresee,
that.
And that's an example of a comp one flood. So the R&D that we're doing now is going to account for all of that.
Right.
We are creating capabilities that will link models that across scales, all the way from large scale coastal or ocean circulation models to the very fine scale pipe networks. And once that's deployed, the Army Corps and the nation will have tools that are much more prepared for events in the future that will have all of these compounded effects built into it.
Okay, great. But we only have a couple more questions, but I just want to just put this out there. Thank you guys so much for what you do for the nation. It's so important. And the great part about this show and telling the Erdic story is people get to learn about how important the research and what you guys do is important for the community and important for the nation. So I just want to go ahead and do my thank you. So thank you. So from your vantage point, what do you consider to be the toughest coastal or hydraulic challenge facing the nation right now, and what is Erdic doing to confront it?
I guess I'm going to go back to the CHL, like the coastal hydraulics. So I'm going to break this down into two parts and then a combination of those.
Okay.
And David, jump in anytime I'd like say something that's goofy or doesn't make sense. From a hydraulics perspective,
mm-hmm.
right? the river, let's go back to Mississippi River, it derives most of its water from spring melt, right? But during the wintertime, there is snowfall and snowpack that gets collected in the Midwest, and then it starts melting, and that creates the flow that maintains the base flow in the Mississippi River. Right now, we do not have a good understanding of how that snow translates into flow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say if I have a 1 foot of snow depth, what is the translation for liquid water from that snow? That is a problem that is still unsolved. The reason it's unsolved is because it requires a lot of observations to quantify what that relationship is. And as over the past several years, we've seen the river go through spikiness, like flood for a long time, dry for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And as those snowpack and the precipitation patterns change, how do we account for that in our flood risk management? Right? It's swinging so much,
right?
And we don't know what the steady state is. So we are doing research to figure that out on where the river and the precipitation is going to land, so that we can plan for the possible extremes and provide that appropriate risk mitigation. On the coastal side, I think David talked about this already, the compound flooding aspects. And extending that out to how does compound flooding impact the resilience of our shoreline? Right? How does that compounded effect cause the sand that people love on the beach? When you go to the beach, you want to feel your toes in the sand,
right?
Not something that's not sand.
Right.
So how does that compounded effect translates into how sand behaves, sand moves, where it moves to, how long it stays there, and how we can keep it there longer?
Right. Okay. David, do you have anything to add?
I'll add one quick one, because I think we should highlight Gary Brown while we have the opportunity. So we say compound flooding, but another thing is just a compound event. And one that I'm not sure a lot of people are aware of is the past couple of years when we've had low water conditions in the Mississippi River, that creates a very unique situation in New Orleans in which the river's low, the Gulf is high, salt actually permeates up the river all the way to where New Orleans gets their drinking water,
right,
like the actual pump station. And to stop that, CHL partnered with New Orleans District, specifically Gary Brown. He actually helped them design a wedge that they could build out of dredge material that would stop that salt wedge.
Right.
Salt is heavier than water, right? So it transports along the bottom of the river. He found a way to interrupt it and keep their drinking water safe. And that's another... You know, we had the long term, and we do need to figure out snow melt, but I admire our agility. We're built for agility, too, and for that to pop up within a couple of weeks, Gary Brown's created a model to figure it out. So I just want to give Gary Brown credit on that one.
And that kind of touches into, I mentioned this earlier, the importance of R&D.
Right.
Right. The capabilities that Gary utilized and just the expertise did not just germinate in isolation instantaneously. Right. It's a result of decades of continual improvement, continual R&D that was at a place and used the right person, Gary Brown, who had the expertise to apply that R&D to provide a solution to a problem that if we had allowed to persist, would cause a wide-scale disruption into the lives of millions of people.
I go back to so important. Everything that happens there is just so, so important. We are going to come up with this last question. So with your crystal ball, looking ahead, what are the key takeaways that you want our listeners to understand about the importance of the work being done at CHL?
Yeah, there's key takeaways. That's a tough one. It's like distilling everything we've talked about today into a few sentences.
Right.
The key takeaway is ERDC does very consequential R&D that not only keeps our nation safe from disasters, but also prepares our warfighter for the challenges that they're going to face in theater or during training, as well as enables our nation's economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We talked about navigation, which is a major contributor to the navigation, to the nation's economy. A couple of years ago, when the Mississippi River was low, it had a big impact on the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Because the commerce was stopped.
Right.
For warfighter support, I mentioned, we talked about a lot of stuff. So it's all extremely consequential R&D. But what we cannot forget is that R&D is done by people.
Right.
ERDIC brings together really smart people from all over the world to deliver capabilities that allow the nation to thrive.
Right.
Yeah, I guess mine would be the key takeaway for the listeners would be there's probably not a good that you've purchased or used or a place you've been in your life that has not been touched by the core. We help that good get to where you could purchase it. We built levees to protect where you hang out and enjoy. And speaking for the whole, not just ERDIC, for the USAs, I've always been impressed. I've spent my whole adult life here at ERDIC. All these people that work with us, they understand that mission. We understand what we're doing every day. We're helping keep this country going, and we're keeping people safe, and we take a ton of pride in that.
Fabulous. That's a great way to end the show. Well, Gaurav and David, thank you so much for being on the show today. We have learned a lot. Thank y'all so much.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll come back at you next week. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Gates.